Luck in the gun, gets the snap. Luck, pocket collapsing, fires left side of the end zone, has Pascal for the score. Touchdown, Colts. Pascal working on Sharice Wright, and Indy answers the Houston touchdown. Deshaun gets the snap, looking, now dancing out to the left side. Watson loads up, fires back of the end zone. Touchdown, DeAndre Hopkins! Nuke! Back line of the end zone for six. Third down and one for the Colts at their 48. Luck under center. One back, Marlon Mack. Luck, long count, trying to get the Texans to jump off. Luck under center, and Clowney jumped. That's a first down, and the game's going to be over if it's a penalty against Jadeveon Clowney.
Neutral zone infraction.
Yep.
Defense number 90.
Luck takes a knee with 35 seconds to go. This game is over. The winning streak is over. The Texans fall to Indianapolis 24-21, and they see their record drop to 9-4, while the Colts are 7-6 and still alive in the division.
Matt Radio, good morning. Texans fall by 3, 24-21 at the hands of the Colts. The 9-game winning streak has come to an end. Matt Radio, Mike, Seth, and Paul with you on an overreaction Monday. I'm actually feeling okay about things, and I was kind of surprised listening to this station on Friday when I was off at how many people seem really confident in a win in this game, because my thought process was this is a Colts team that could exploit a lot of what the Texans do poorly, which is protect Deshaun Watson consistently with their offensive line, and really the secondary against all the weapons that Indianapolis has. So my main takeaway from this game is that this is the exact kind of matchup, especially against a quarterback who's playing at such a high level, that's going to exploit what the Texans do poorly. Like, simply put, I actually give the Texans a lot of credit for losing the game only by three.
Okay, all right.
Bear with me. The Colts were by far the better team on the field. Andrew Luck was the best player on the field on Sunday. Well, actually, check that. Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton were the best players on the field on Sunday, and I don't think it was even that close.
You know what you are? You've become that which you most despise. You know what you just did?
What?
You did, what did you expect to happen, guy? Are you going to tell me? Yes, you did. Paul's shaking his head yes.
You sound exactly like
if you had been in here on Friday, big old, big bald Mike would have been in here and been like, yep, Texans are going to get their butts whooped this weekend, and I know it for sure. But you didn't have the, you had the day off because you had obligations,
yep.
And now you're able to come in and say, well, look, of course the team that beat the Colts up in Indianapolis is going to lose on Sunday. I felt all the very same things, and the huge wild card obviously was going to be, are they going to get gashed once again by T.Y. Hilton? One out of three times that the Colts play up here, T.Y. Hilton doesn't gash them. So you could have just rolled some weird shaped Dungeons and Dragons BS die out on the table and said will T.Y. Hilton kill them and let them bleed out all over the killing room floor, or won't he? And he did. Because the pass rush this team needs the pass rush to be nails.
Yeah.
And it wasn't nails. So that to me was one of the big things. And then that also the Texans did not run the ball well. Because they're a team that has a lot of rushing yards because they run the ball a lot. It's not because they're an effective, they're not a necessarily vicious rushing attack.
Yep. This game highlighted all their weaknesses. They struggle against teams that have good quarterbacks. Fast wide receivers are going to give them a whole lot of trouble. You take a look at the pass rush, as you mentioned, Seth. Yeah, if they're not an avalanche of doom, they're not slowing down an offense that's led by Andrew Luck. And then on the offensive side of things, this has been my concern for the rest of the season. They're just not consistent enough. You can rely on this game plan, and when you can call yourself a matchup offense of balance by establishing the run and then passing off of the run. But if you can't run the football, you're going to ultimately end up with a lot of drives that don't result in points. And I just think it's a big blown opportunity, not just because of all the things that happened in the AFC today, but much like in the first go-round with Indianapolis, the Colts couldn't do anything early on. I mean, four straight three and outs to open the game the Colts offense had, and you only had a 7-0 lead, where you had a 28-10 lead early on the Indianapolis Colts in the first game this season, and you were able to sit on that, and ultimately you win.
They don't do soft well. And on defense, I think they need to be boom or bust and just be super aggressive all the time. When they did blitz in the second half, they had some good success with it. It's just, It's a two-sided blade where, yes, they were able to blitz effectively sometimes, but also you're blitzing because you can't get as good a pass rush as you need to protect that weak secondary. Do we blitz and expose that weakened secondary even more if the blitz doesn't get home? It's a dicey proposition to try to play with the lead. And then that also, look, the offense is what it has been, which is where it's ranked statistically, which is what we've seen. Middle? It's a mediocre offense. What were you going to say? Milk toast?
Middle.
Yeah. Middle, milk toast, mediocre, any M word you want to throw in there. I was warned this weekend not to be bagging on the millennials, so I won't throw in a millennialish type offense in there. Well, it's one of our listeners that I like a lot. He's like, Seth, how come you're always bringing up age? And I thought, you know what? I am always. I don't do it out of a snobbery. I like figuring out people's different perspectives in life. And depending on when you grew up and where you are and everything, you have different perspectives. A lot of Texans fans might say, well, there's some 12-year-old kid out there right now riding on his way into school. And he's saying, Daddy, why does T.Y. Hilton own this city? Why do you have to pay rent to the evil landlord? You know what he is? He's like a landlord. He's a landlord that doesn't make repairs on your home, and yet you keep paying him the check every damn week so you can live in a pit of 150-yard receiving games. What's he averaging versus the Texans now in Houston? Like 125, 150 or so?
I know that Pat D. Stat tweeted out something like, coming into the game at NRG, who was averaging 18.4 yards a catch, now it's at like 19. And it's not like it's on five catches.
On the season or versus Texans?
Sorry, this is against the Texans at NRG.
Yeah.
So since he was drafted in 2012.
You know what we need to do? He's a little too cushy playing in a domed stadium. We need to open that roof up, expose him to the elements, the vicious wind, the swirling maelstrom that is NRG Field when the roof is open.
Well,
and it kind of feels like maybe you're outside, but more like you're driving in a car with a sunroof.
Especially on a day like yesterday, when it would have been basically a cold weather game.
Yeah.
As far as these things go.
Yeah. His frigid bones would shatter and explode instead of him having the ability to do what his cousin Paris did, make a sex tape at NRG Stadium as he continues to own the Houston Texans.
That'd be awesome if they were actually cousins. I got confused there
exactly
for a second.
The same. Hold on a second.
That was my main takeaway from the game, is that I don't feel terrible about the Texans' overall situation, because part of it is, if you take a step back and you say, all right, it's August. I tell you the Texans on December 12th are a 9-4 football team with a chance to clinch the AFC South with a very winnable game against the Jets on Saturday. You would say, yeah, that about makes sense. And when you think about these weaknesses that we're going to talk about all day and all week long, offensive line, cornerback, realistically, those are not ones that Brian Gain and O'Brien could have solved in one off season. Now, there are some weaknesses in some of the moves they have made and haven't made, but ultimately it comes down to, like, they can't just solve all that right now.
I didn't get to watch the Cowboys yesterday. Did Xavier Suofilo continue to solidify the Cowboys' offensive line?
Not really. This is
beginning to be a bad look for the Texans, by the way.
When I watch the Cowboys, I don't really see him doing much.
I see him making the same mistakes that he's made before, but then also having some solid play like he had before, but with Ezekiel Elliott running behind him. That's what I see.
Yeah, and now Amari Cooper's bailing the Cowboys out left and right, too. He had 200 yards plus receiving and a ridiculous touchdown once again. I mean, that is essentially Dallas right now. Dak Prescott stinks, but Amari Cooper's really good, and that trade actually ended up being good.
You know what? Yeah, now Dallas is T.Y. Hiltoning us.
Yep.
Now they're doing it. Now they're back, and like Jerry is relevant, and Jason Garrett's going to keep his job. That was the Jason Garrett job bowl yesterday.
Yeah, he's going to keep his job. I thought he was done 5 weeks ago. 5 weeks ago today, they lost to Tennessee. Jason Garrett will stay.
How do you trade for Amari Cooper? Why would you spend a first-round pick on a veteran wide receiver? I mean, sure, I know the Patriots and the Rams have both done it in the last 3 years, but how? Why would you do it?
You have to pay for Amari Cooper. You're crazy. You're trading for the opportunity to pay Amari Cooper, Mike.
Listen, I'm gonna settle everybody to hell down right now. If you're in there with your little Twitter thumbs warming up, about to come at me, and I'm amazed that I still get this. I got one yesterday afternoon. How are they going to beat a team like the Steelers in the playoffs? This is what you do. You go invent yourself a time machine, take yourself back in time 3 weeks, and start paying the hell attention. The Steelers are an abject disaster. You want to feel better about yourself? Tune into Pittsburgh Steelers radio this morning. These guys are, they're going down a hill with no brakes in a car with a woman they don't love.
Or Patriots Radio. I may or may not have tuned into WEI this morning because I had to hear what those guys were saying today about that catastrophe at the end of that game. Paul, you were looking at me like, with a point I made about a minute ago, like I was maybe being not critical enough.
It's not necessarily that as much as, okay, so we're looking at the rest of the schedule for this team, and we mentioned some of the issues that aren't fixable in one off season. The offensive line, I totally agree with you on that, Mike. But the secondary, weren't they supposed to have fixed this? Wasn't Aaron Colvin, bringing him in, supposed to upgrade your secondary?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, Kevin Johnson, you had faith enough in him to give them the fifth-year option.
Well, those are the two big ones.
Those are the two huge ones, which is saying like they didn't have an opportunity. They did spend good money on Aaron Colvin, who's been relegated to a...
What does he do?
I hope he's actually still recovering from his injury, because otherwise, what a bust of a signing. Like, what about... You know what? And then... The Jacksonville Jaguars have become your T.Y. Hilton. They're your daddy on that move. Like, hey, he looked great when he was playing alongside two really good cornerbacks, where now, what are you getting out of him? What are you expecting out of him? Also this... why? I'm confused here. I'm watching Joe Webb yesterday not know what to do while he's playing receiver. Why exactly is Joe Webb on the team other than to be, what, a special teams player / quarterback / wide receiver?
Why exactly does
he not know what he's doing?
I actually disagree with you about this. Respectfully, I disagree about this because I
do it disrespectfully. I prefer that.
Well,
if you're going to defecate all over me and try to convince me, what are you, Bill O'Brien's stooge? No, versatility means you can do multiple things
well.
He's on the team because he's versatile, except that he doesn't know what he's doing when he's playing receiver.
I think that they genuinely like how he is as a special teams player, and he can be like the little wildcat third string quarterback. I think this is the slot receivers thing because he's played receiver in the NFL before.
Right.
Not that well, obviously, otherwise he'd be a receiver. But like, I think he can play on the outside. I think is it too much? Is it too critical to be harsh on Joe Webb for
because he's
basically now the third string slot receiver.
I'm being critical of Bill O'Brien and Brian Gain because what I'm going to say is, okay, he's a good special teams player. You know what there are other of? Are young, cheap special teams players who you don't have on the roster because they're supposed to bring more to the table than just that. So the question becomes, all right, is he a special teams player or is he a quarterback or is he a wide receiver? Typically, most special teams players also are very adept at and know the playbook of the role they're supposed to be filling when they get elevated above being a special teams. Terrell Davis at one point in time was a very good special teams player. When he got his chance to play running back, he was a very good running back. I don't know what Joe Webb is and why he's on the roster.
All right, 713.
Compared to a younger, cheaper special teams player.
He's there for special teams. I guess you just have to look at the game and say, you don't expect DeAndre Carter to die in the end zone, much like you don't expect Kiki QT to be out every single week, though maybe you should be expecting Kiki QT to be out every single week.